Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report, the first weekend show of 2026. I hope you all had a very happy new year. And hey, I think we're all looking forward to 2026 to see what sort of momentum these markets, especially commodities, metals, broadly can carry into and throughout this year, because it was a wild end to the year. We're going to talk about a lot of the metals kicking off this show, and in the back half of the show, going to move more to the energy sector. I am starting this show with Daryl Fletcher. Daryl is a managing director of commodities at Bannockburn Capital Markets, joins me on a monthly basis to really give us an insight from the commodities trading desk at Bannockburn. Really level-headed approach here, which I think is going to be very interesting to get Daryl's insights on silver. We don't usually talk silver that much because simply a smaller market. We do usually touch on the precious metals, but silver is just that smaller market in general. But boy, oh boy, some of the kind of craziness that was happening at the tail end of the year, and also some of the almost fake news that starts to be propagated by all the analysts out there. Actually, not analysts, but some of the new commentators that come into the space. So a lot for Daryl and I to chat about. But Daryl, let's start off with a quick little 2025 recap. Precious metals, best performing asset class throughout the year by a wide margin. Gold up over 60%. Silver up over 160%. A lot of that came just at the end of the year as well. Base metals did quite well. Copper alone was up about 40%. We also saw a run in some energy metals as well. So really, it just seemed like a whole lot more of the spotlight shining on metals because of the runs that they were having. So Daryl, give us a little recap in terms of December and 2025. What caught your eye, please?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. It's interesting. It's been a fun year for sure. This last month here, beginning of the last few trading days, really reflected what we've seen on the year. It really is another reflection of what we've seen the whole year. I can kind of run through like the big picture, and then I like to look at sectors within those. So the Bloomberg Commodity Index total return, it's going to be up about 18-19%. Spot indexes, real broad look, commodity across the board, it's going to be up about 16%. Now the subsectors, as you alluded to, completely led by the precious metal sector. The precious metal sector between silver and gold, call it up 80%. And then London Metal Exchange Index up about 28%. That was led by copper, but also aluminum and tin had really good years. So strong year across the board in metals, precious, base, even steel, even the steel markets were higher. And then the laggard was energy. So energy's down about 11%, we'll call it, crude and products. Crude's going to end up on a front-month basis down around 18-19% on the year, which is really what I thought we would grind lower. Then, on the broader picture, even the agriculture index is down about 5%, but that's nominal. So, yeah, metals are really higher, like amazingly higher. We talked about it before the show. For me, I've been trading commodities for 30 years. It's been interesting and kind of nice to see metals take the spotlight this year for sure. Across the board, it's been really interesting. And then I think, I'll do my year review and 26 outlook coming up, and it looks like top spot's going to be for silver. Silver and platinum were coming into this week. I thought we'd have a couple days of trading here and we'd be fighting it out for the top spot, but it looks like it's indeed going to be silver will be the leader. But the sector views I had for 25 really did fall in line. I guess I got lucky this year with precious metals being my highest conviction to be higher. Base metals were constructive. The energy sector with crude, grinding lower. It did what we thought it would do, and those fundamentals still aren't very good. I guess you could sum it up. I the one thing I didn't see was the outsized moves of directionally, yes, but I didn't think an ounce of silver would end up higher than a barrel of oil by the end of the year. So it's been an interesting year for sure.
Daryl, let's talk about the fundamentals that matter to you, because I feel like everybody ties in different narratives and different so-called fundamentals that are driving these prices. And I think sometimes fundamentals matter in the long run. Sometimes in the short run, it's simply trading momentum, where traders are positioned and where some of the fast money runs to. But right now, some of the main fundamentals that everyone keeps talking about is, quite frankly, a bit of a shift away from the US dollar or the US markets broadly. Even though the US markets were up, they still underperformed almost every other developed market out there. Plus, we also have, look, rate cuts that were slow coming this year, but they did come at the tail end of the year, and we even have some forecasts for more rate cuts next year. All these supply shortages, we keep hearing about how there just aren't enough metals, whether it's base metals, even now tying in silver. We keep hearing there isn't enough silver out there. That seems to be a key for the bulls to latch onto as well. But curious, in terms of the fundamentals that matter to you, what matters?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentals, that's what I follow. I'm not, you know, really following the technical levels as much. Clearly, there's been money chasing and there's been a lot of momentum in these price moves. And you know, silver is always going to move in tandem with gold, but, you know, it's going to have bigger moves, higher and bigger moves lower, just because it's a smaller market. But, you know, you did have the fundamentals you noted are the ones that have been driving this all year long. Heavy debt loads, you know, rotation from government bonds and you know, those types of financial instruments, you know, to some extent overvaluation, the equity markets. So you just had more and more of a rollover move into hard assets, and gold's going to lead the way there. And then silver has, you know, dual capabilities, really, because it's also used in electronics, solar panels, things like that. So that's kind of the next step down, and the platinum and palladium also have more industrial use also. So they, you know, there's a dual use there on both of those. So I think the valuation gap also between gold and silver came into play to some extent this year, or, you know, in the start of the year. So those ratios have come down. So it's been a pretty, you know, across the board solid move for it. You know, the other bigger picture I'm spending more time looking at is how long have we just been underinvested in, whether it's copper, silver, mines in general. You know, that's a long cycle that's starting to turn finally. And I think that kind of is why I'm spending some time looking at, are we on the front end here of a really longer bull cycle in commodities? Because this stuff's needed now.
Now, when you talk valuations, how about the valuations if we compare something like gold to the U.S. equity markets? We all kept hearing about how much paper assets were dominating inflows, and quite frankly, hard assets just weren't garnering much, that they were being ignored. But just the run we saw this year in terms of gold outperforming the markets, we are now at levels that, quite frankly, gold valuation we haven't seen since 2020, the spike there, but we would go the whole way back to 2013 to see this sort of, ratio of gold to the S&P. Is that a key contributor here, almost in maybe a longer term sense, as you alluded to a couple of times, of a shifting market more moving to hard assets?
Yes, and I think that's the question, is what's the level that, you know, everyone, it's different for everyone, obviously, from an investor's perspective, but, you know, what is the right level? But it just has been ignored for so long. And I just think, you know, on a percentage basis, there could be, you know, continued long move into hard assets. It's, you know, just basically the next alternative to move into to round things out in terms of diversification.
So curious how you view what countries are leading this, I guess, resurgence in metals, because it seemed like for the last decade plus, we were talking about China and maybe even India, but mostly China, driving a whole lot of the commodities, putting in a floor price for a lot of these commodities. But a lot of what I was seeing in terms of ETF inflows this year was the U.S. really picking up the steamer, North America broadly getting more invested in metals, commodities across the board. What were you seeing?
Yeah, the same thing. I mean, it seems like the West is still playing catch up from what was happening in the China, India type markets. You know, it's interesting. It's like things have come into view now on this that have been out of view for a long time. And that's why I really wonder if we're in very early innings, you know, you and I are both big baseball fans, and we have very early innings here on this rotation. And, you know, maybe there's not even a pitch clock on right now. So it could be long. I mean, you see the moves, you get sell offs, they bounce right back. We had a sell off on Monday, you know, huge move up on Friday. Volumes have been light in the holidays, so you're getting some, you know, really outsized moves probably. But it seems like every time these move higher, they get floored and they just move right back up.
Daryl, what historical reference do we have? You said you've been in this market for over 30 years. I've technically been in it for about 20 years, but much more active in the last 15 years. And look, I've been on record saying this year was really the most important year, the best year that I've seen in about those 15 years. Clearly, we can see by price moves, whether it's equities or the metals prices, and simply the outperformance across any other metric you want to use in markets, that yes, the numbers say that this was the best year in well over a decade, maybe multiple decades. What's your assessment on the historical reference of what 2025 was like and what that could mean for 2026?
Yeah, I mean, this record year, I mean, I like to look at inflation adjusted ratios on these, but you know, basically it gets to the point where you're like, okay, another record, whether it's copper, platinum, silver, gold. It is what it is. And I think the big question right now is two and going forward is, okay, things have changed, clearly. We're going to have new floors here. What's the right valuation? Really hard to tell. You know, technicals don't come into play now here when you've blown everything out. I think in the, okay, let's call it, oh, 1 year, I like to think of bigger, longer cycles in terms of commodities, especially from a fundamental perspective. But for 26, if you're just looking at that, as I start to look into going forward into 26, I think it's going to take some really critical thinking around, all right, fundamentals really haven't changed. There's a big shift going on here. It seems like it's for real. But how much of the gains that maybe would have come in 26 have already been accounted for in 25? These are huge moves. I mean, huge. The copper silver is going to end up 160, 100%, 170% higher. So it could be very interesting in that we don't, you know, things really don't change into 26. And I'm doing some critical analysis now on that, and I don't really see the fundamentals changing much across commodities. But what does that really mean for price action? Given the big move we've had, is going to be very interesting. I don't have an answer.
So what will give us an answer to this, other than really just recapping in a year's time what we saw? Is the start of the year important? Does that not matter as much to you, considering how much some of these metals went up at the end of the year? How, as we progress through next year, are you going to be watching it, and what will give us maybe a little bit of a heads up of how the year's going to progress ahead of us?
Yeah, again, I think the price movements are going to be volatile again. So I think you have to be really level-headed around, are the fundamentals that made these things happen staying in play? I don't see them changing. We're going to have a lower interest rate environment that seems to be pretty well drawn out, just in how much lower is going to be interesting. Fundamental demands on these things, I mean, I'm tracking those, and you're going to have to be steady and have a longer view. The other, you know, then, you know, when it comes to metals, you always have mine output and mine disruptions, which we had plenty of those in 25 also. So how fast are these things coming to market? Is there real investment in terms of getting metals to market? The other things to watch will be global copper. For instance, that global copper inventories may, from a global perspective, may not be changing as much as the price seems to reflect, but a lot of it's moving to the United States and out of the area. So there's huge shifts in these supplies right now going on. And that's, you know, a reflection of some of the geopolitics going on now too. So I don't think these things are going to change next year. I really don't. And speaking of like shorter term commodity, as we get into 26, you bring up a good point I wanted to touch on. There is going to be rebalancing going on in some of the major commodity indexes, namely the Bloomberg Commodity Index and SPGCSI, which typically is kind of noise on the roll period, in like mid-January is when these start, I think, like that second week. Typically, it's just kind of noise. But because the moves have been so outsized in the precious metal sector, the weighting, the formulas are a little complex, but the weightings are going to basically produce some selling in silver and in gold open interest to get the weights back in line, because they do have caps in terms of both individual commodity cap percentages and also the sectors. that make it up. Like, for instance, basically the BCOM index, the way it's looked at, there's a couple different versions of it, but energy's 25%, roughly, ag's 25, industrial metals 15, precious metals 26. But because of the weighting is a formula of both production and liquidity, to some extent value, there's going to have to be some movement to rebalance those down. I think there's a little bit of energy and ag buying that will happen to rebalance, and then just marginal maybe gains in crude and some base metals, believe it or not. But the biggest move will be in some selling on the precious side. But that should be, I mean, it's going to be higher than normal, but that should be a little bit of noise in like second, third week of January.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to bring that up. So thanks for addressing that. So, hey, that almost just means more volatility, maybe even another buying opportunity for those wanting to get back in or trade those metals, especially the precious metals. Let's move now into individual sectors, individual commodities. I want to start with silver because, boy, oh boy, just this last week, silver came into the week on Monday. The price spiked over $80 an ounce. Then it dropped on Monday down to $70 an ounce and has been rebounding throughout the week. As we're recording this right before New Year's, it's back in the high 70s. When we get these price spikes, I find we get a whole lot of misinformation out there. A whole lot of stuff that I was reading is that this is a short squeeze and that JP Morgan and other banks are running scared. I do see the short squeeze angle to it. Also hearing that there is a silver shortage. Governments are front running this shortage because they know it's coming. People looking at the COMEX inventory saying that the registered category has dropped by 60 or 70% just in December. That's showing this shortage happening. Daryl, what's your view on why we're seeing this volatility at the end of the year in what has been a spiking market for the last couple months?
Yeah, I try to stay, you know, kind of level-headed on it because the headlines have taken over. This is really, in the commodity space, what pretty much everyone wants to talk about is silver because it's been a, you know, fascinating year. And then we had the huge run-up last week. You had margin increases, so it sold back off. A lot of different announcements around the shifts, again, like copper. Part of the stock's available in London. Is, you know, it's moving to the United States because I think that the tariffs and tariffs are going to stay on the board in this administration. That's a leveraging tool they have, and they're going to keep using it. So, yeah, the headlines kind of rallied this in the end. I think also, as we all know, the end of the year you have lighter trading volume. So, like that move on Friday, I think there was really no defense out there to keep it from just moving higher and higher. And then you've had such a big move up, people are jumping on it. So you have a big momentum trade there. Then, you know, sold back off on Monday and back up again today. So it's really hard to tell what the real value is here right now. But I think the fundamentals have been positive. Clearly, the moves in silver are always going to be outstretched versus gold is going to overshoot and undershoot. So you got to stay level-headed for sure.
Oh, boy. It can be hard, though, especially when you're seeing a market just spike. The chart is just wild to see what's there. Question, though, on that short squeeze narrative, this does seem a bit like a short squeeze, though, doesn't it? Especially at the end of the year with those thinner trading volumes.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that had to do with the cost for leasing in London and some of the movements of the actual physical and the flows into ETFs. So I don't know. I don't know that it's been fleshed out for sure. But, you know, the price action, there was basically they were running scared here in the past month or two on certain days.
So, Daryl, what about those CME margins being raised? Look, this does happen when you have a spiking market. From my understanding, it's simply because CME, look, when you have lower margin requirements, people can move the market even more with less money. But the one argument being the last time we saw margins raised quickly, and the expectation is these margins will keep getting raised, was back in 2011. I believe in May, the margins were raised 5 times in 9 days, and that, for the most part, really put a top in the market. What's your take on these margin requirements being raised for silver?
Yeah, that hit. I think that's partial what the sell-off was on Monday with the margin increases. Yeah, I think from a margin perspective, that tends to flesh out some of the momentum, which is kind of the price action we saw. It kind of makes sense. If you have a big increase, it's going to flesh out kind of the marginal type investor or the marginal positioning. So it's honestly, it's probably pretty healthy. So I think it's probably a good move. And then we just kind of move on from here and try to stick back to the fundamentals.
Yeah, what these fundamentals are. Again, when you see a market move that much, I'm sure there we do need more silver being mined because it's being used. But again, this sort of a move kind of goes outsized of any sort of longer term shortage that we need. Let's talk gold then, because the whole narrative for gold heading into this year was central bank buying. And it doesn't really seem like central bank buying has slowed down. Central banks have been buying gold for quite a few years now. I believe it's in between 5 to 10 years of pretty steady purchases, plus the whole rate cut narrative that even though everyone expected more rate cuts, we still got a couple at the end of the year. And now people are expecting even more next year as Trump, when Trump gets his person leading the Fed. But we're also hearing about this new BRICS currency called the unit, 40% backed by physical gold, 60% backed by the BRICS nations' currencies. What matters for gold here? What are you paying attention to?
That's interesting. We talked about that prior to the show. That's an interesting concept. It would not be out of line with the general thoughts right now of what we talked about, basically general moving to hard assets and different ways to do that as a financial instrument. So that's interesting. I don't know. Gold, I mean, again, gold's the pure play for this move, and it's a stronger, wider, thicker market for sure. I don't really see things changing that much in the gold market in terms of fundamentals and central bank buying, interest rates moving lower, basically retreating from government bonds and the fundamentals that have driven it all year. So, silver is kind of doing its thing. It's, moving with it, but it overshoots, undershoots, and gold seems to be, relatively speaking, gold's been trudging along, which is hard to believe.
So I guess the positive outlook for 2026, but again, that whole question of how much of those gains been pushed forward into 2025, I think that question more so for silver because of the spike at the end of the year. What about copper, though? Copper, even it's done really well this year, closing the year really at all-time highs. It had that one spike on the tariff news earlier in the year, and after that sell-off, once that clarification was issued by the White House, I guess, then a copper drop, but then just kept grinding higher. It's a strong copper market, which also is somewhat confusing to me because copper and crude are supposed to be more looking ahead to overall economic indicators, but they're going in completely different directions. So just in terms of copper, what's it telling you? Is the economy strong or is this a shortage narrative?
Well, I think it's a shortage narrative to some extent, but it's also the way that the world is moving and the need for metals as we decarbonize and reindustrialize the infrastructure, it's much more a reflection of that. And you're right, both CME, COMEX type copper is up about 43% as we speak on the year, and LME, same. You're right, we had that big flush out in the differential in July, although COMEX copper is still maintaining a premium. And then it's just kind of gotten right back in line and moved up. It's been more in sync with gold in terms of its movement. And meanwhile, crude's been moving down. But I think that's more of a reflection of the changes in the energy space and basically just rollover of the types of commodities that are going to be being used and being needed going forward. It's very interesting. COMEX forward curve, okay, let's call it, we're in the 575 range here this week. But the forward curve is in contango. You go out in the late 20s, let's call it late 29, 28, 29, you're at 650. So that's a pretty strong outlook for copper. Then, the amount of copper that's going to be needed and the amount of copper that's going to be produced as we get into 2030, there's a big gap there, really big gap. A lot of it's, it's just a combination of things, but it is basically some reindustrialization of the country infrastructure that's needed, whether it's AI or not, EV, just going to be a much bigger component use of copper. And you've seen that to some extent in some of these other metals, whether it's been tin is up 44% this year, the same. Those are the two leaders on the LME for the year. Tin, kind of like silver, is a really good conductivity for electronics uses. So yeah, that's where I think it's going to be really interesting. You brought this up, this copper, called copper and oil, they're not correlating. And I don't see that changing either. I don't see like that general tie together anymore, just because of the way things have changed going forward.
The one big argument I get too is that bringing copper supply online is vastly harder than bringing crude supply online. When price goes up, we do see more crude, more production. Quite simply, copper, it takes years, sometimes decades, to get a mine up and running. And quite frankly, we've been seeing more or less these long life mines start to produce less and less. So that's the argument that I get in terms of why crude and copper could be also going in very different directions. Let's talk crude, though. We won't spend too much time on this because the back half of the show, we are bringing on Joseph Schachter, who really is focused on oil and natural gas. And I know that he has a much more positive look for 2026. But look, crude, the price has really been cut in half since the highs in 2022. It's been a persistent grinding downtrend. And crude, quite frankly, is ending the year really at lows for the last few years. Any change that you're seeing in the crude outlook?
Yeah, I do follow crude. I mean, it's going to end up around down about 18% on a front month basis. It kind of did what I thought it would do. It ground low. It kind of kept grinding lower throughout the year. Although, one thing that's caught my eye in the past couple of weeks is this 55 to 57, we'll call it $55 level on WTI has held. So I'm just watching this because 55 to 57 has held multiple times, doesn't want to go below that. The forward curve is really relatively flat through 27, call it 58, like really flat. And then you start to take up in 28 up to the 59 level. So yeah, fundamentals don't look good. The surplus of 4 million barrels per day is, I think, what some of the agencies are looking at. But the thing that's held it up here in the past few weeks specifically are the geopolitics. And those aren't going away either. Now, Venezuela is not a big producer, like 1%, but it's getting a lot of headline. But, you know, Russia, Ukraine, that has not come to where they wanted it to be. So fundamentally, it still looks bearish. But one thing I'll say is I've traded crude for a long time. The longer it kind of holds these bottom ranges, the more it can kind of build from here. So I don't know. I'm kind of neutral. The forward curve is showing the same thing right now. OPEC Plus meets this week. They don't expect any changes of that halt in production increases. Those will be the things to watch, I think, going into 26 on the crude side. But it did pretty much what I thought it would do this year.
Now, quick question on nat gas. Winter time, we usually do see the nat gas price move higher. But the one thing that I want to get your insights on are LNG exports. I feel like we've been talking about these LNG terminals coming online for the last few years, 3 years maybe, and they are finally starting to come online. The big question being, how much is that going to impact price? And does it quite simply set a higher floor price for nat gas because of these LNG terminals and the export abilities now? What's your outlook for nat gas and how important and where do we even stand with these LNG exports?
Yeah, the LNG numbers have been impressive. We've been running 18 to 20 BCF a day here in December in terms of exports, which is hitting record levels. I think if you look back at some of the forecasts, we're kind of running ahead of what was expected. And there's probably, depending on how you look at the projects, whether it's just U.S. or Canada, but you're looking at getting into 35 to 40 BCF here by the end of the decade. So that's sizable. Now, production has been strong. Seasonally, we're still in that 110 BCF range, which is really strong for this time of year. We haven't had, you have to really look at it, you know, production's running high, but nothing's really gone wrong. We haven't had freeze-offs, really, per se, like we can get. We didn't have a hurricane season. So production's been running really well. I would say most of these companies are still being very disciplined, too. So I was constructive on natural gas this year. It did run the 25. I look at front month average, it was going to be around 360 range, and 24 was 240. So, yeah, it was higher this year for sure. 26, 27, the forward curves, you're looking in the high 390-ish, 380, 390 range. So, I'm generally constructive again on natural gas going forward to some extent around LNG because that is kind of it's a sticky, like once it's turned on, you're not going to really be super motivated to turn it off. So it's a constant pull. Interesting thing on the move we had in the past month with this volatility that run up into north of 5 and then sold back to 380. So it's, you know, the fun winter gas trading where you have these huge swings. You know, December got off to a really warm start, and then the second half has been cold. First half of January is looking warm, above normal again. So 5-year average is right in where we are in inventory right now, is right in line with the 5-year average, dead on. So we're in pretty good shape. I think the natural gas market is well valued. I think the curve looks right. Right now, we're about to call winter gas right now $4. So, but I'm generally constructive going forward on it because of LNG, because things really haven't gone wrong in terms of production, things that can go wrong. Like, for example, look at mining, you can have production issues. So, yeah, I'm generally positive on it going out the next year or two.
Okay, I get that. So essentially a balanced market, but there are these, again, kind of fundamental drivers that we all know are coming, but are going to at least change a bit more of that demand side. So, hey, very interesting. Daryl, thank you so much for taking some time with us and going around the horn and talking all these different commodities. It has been a very different market and a totally different sentiment towards commodities now in 2026. We all know how many momentum chasers there are in the market. And quite frankly, commodities just hadn't given these investors a reason to come into this sector. Now they are definitely waking up and have been benefiting from these moves higher. Man, 2026 is going to be interesting. Again, Daryl Fletcher, Managing Director of Commodities at Bannockburn Capital Markets. Daryl, thank you so much for your time today. And everyone, stick around. I'm going to be right back, switching our focus exclusively to the energy sector.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.